Our friend Yael Osowski with the Consumer Choice Center joining us, as he does every couple of weeks. I never know where Yael is at. He's here, there, everywhere. Thousands of miles away on the other side of the world. Sometimes he's right in our back door, vacationing in one of the many lakes that we have here in the state of South Carolina. Mr. Osowski, what's going on, my friend? Good morning.
Good morning, Joe. Feeling good. I was able to visit the great Germanic tradition of Oktoberfest there last week, so I enjoyed myself there. And I'm installed back home, and unlike you guys with that beautiful sun, we do not have that, and we're already heading into winter and very cold temperatures here in Central Europe.
How many Das Boots did you drink at Oktoberfest?
You know, I went a bit easy this year. I did the 1 liter beer, right? I probably only had about three or four. And I did not get on a scooter afterwards, as I normally do, so I was very responsible.
I mean, look at that. You're getting old. You're getting mature, my friend. I guess you got two little girls at home that you have to care for. So did that come into your mind while you were hanging out with your boys?
You get stuffed because you're also eating pretzels or eating, some of the nice packed meats they have there. You're having a good time. You're singing along. You get caught up in the wind of it. And I think that's mostly what happened. But, you got to watch yourself with these leaders. Sometimes they do go down pretty quickly.
They creep up on you. ConsumerChoiceCenter.org, the website, if you want to learn more about what they do and why they do it around the world. All right, a lot of talk these days surrounding energy. We know over in your side of the world, energy costs have skyrocketed here in the United States, given the emergence in terms of technology, right? These data centers that are popping up everywhere. The fact that, there are some people in our country that want to push towards electrification. They want to get away from oil and gas. If that becomes a reality, or if we're going to even take a step forward to making that a reality, what are some of the things that need to happen to build up capacity in our country? I don't know that there's necessarily a will for that, given that we enjoy relatively cheap, abundant, affordable ways to fill up our gas tank and get around from A to B on a day-to-day basis. But a lot of talk these days about needing to upgrade our system. What needs to be done to make that actually a reality?
Yeah, I think it's an important question because you're going to hear this a lot more and it's going to be a big part of the headlines. And I actually predict that come, let's say, the midterm elections, more the federal elections, we're going to hear a lot more about data centers, about energy use, and there's just going to be a lot of misinformation and a lot of misunderstanding. And I think a lot of people just don't realize that, many of these data centers are being built up. They're being constructed by local companies using local labor and actually providing local jobs, doing something great, empowering IT, empowering AI, and sort of the next level data centers. I know in South Carolina, there's something like 30 of them that are fairly large, that are in counties all over the state and are providing a great amount of infrastructure, just not just for the local communities, but doing well. But you also got to power that stuff, and you have to power local communities. And one thing that we always hear about in the sort of electrification of everything is that we got to get everybody on EVs. And I find this a very interesting point. The New York Times had an article about essentially how much it costs to actually drive an EV. And if we look in South Carolina, if you want to drive 100 miles, if you basically are going to try to fill it up with gas versus electric, you're actually going to be cheaper if you just fill it up with gas than if you use the kind of superchargers, electric car stations that are all over the state. And that's really just, it comes down to the electricity. And South Carolina, as we've mentioned a couple times, is a power player. It does have over 51% in terms of nuclear energy that provides electricity to the grid. But we're going to need even more of that if we want our stuff to be electric, if we want to have good industries, a lot of our car manufacturers. I know there's a new plant just north of Columbia that's going really well. We want a lot more out west as well. There's so much that will be necessary, and that will mean a lot more electricity. It will mean a lot more energy. And I think we kind of negate that sometimes. We don't really think about it. But this is something that impacts not just the bills of everyday South Carolinians, but impacts the bills of anyone across the country.
Well, it seems like every year, right, these utility companies petition for a rate increase for the everyday resident out there, rate payer. Now, with that said, seems as if they'll tell us one thing, but then look to do another, right? So these data centers, they're going to help build corporations and supply energy for a number of different reasons, mainly when it comes to the economy and not necessarily the individual rate payer or your neighborhood. So Do we see an issue here when it comes to raising our rates to pay something that the corporations are going to take advantage of with the construction of these centers?
I mean, it's a big question. It's a big balancing act because we have seen that many utilities are sending out these letters, you know, as they're required to do by state law and saying, okay, this is our proposed plan for increasing whatever the rates might be. And actually, a lot of that is fairly complicated. It's not always because it's being so-called sucked up elsewhere. A lot of times it has to do just with the infrastructure. They have to do a lot of upkeep. There's a lot of transmission lines that are fairly old that they have to do a lot of renovations on or build up. Sometimes they're just not able to connect certain parts of the state or different communities, so they have to do it in. And then South Carolina also has different grids. So if you have like the northeastern sector of the state, this is actually heavily dependent on coal for a lot of the electricity. So that runs differently than it does down near Augusta, Georgia, or down near Hilton Head. So there's a lot of different elements that go into building up what your price package is going to be. I don't think it's necessarily at the feet of the data centers just yet, because again, many of these have been running for a long time and you haven't seen some, you know, huge growth, at least in South Carolina. But it is true that prices grow, you know, around 3% generally year on year. And when it comes to electricity prices, everyone has a different story about their own units at home. And a lot of that is just complicated. Sometimes it's been incentives from either the state government or the federal government to upgrade this stuff. If you remember, we had this kind of Green New Deal type bill with the Joe Biden administration that poured a lot of money into subsidies so that people would convert to using these either hot water pumps or different types of electricity to have at their house. So you've had a lot of that bad money that's been in the system, and that has caused a lot of malinvestment. I do think in the long term, South Carolina will do better than other states just because it has, as I mentioned, that nuclear power. But yeah, it's definitely a concern. And I think, you know, as ratepayers, as taxpayers, as electricity customers, you know, you do have a voice, and, you know, there are mechanisms where you can complain and you can go against. And I think we need to have more competition there. We need to have more available energy. And if we're getting fleeced, anyone who might be in Myrtle Beach or anywhere else, I think you're perfectly within your rights to complain and try to organize your citizens, too.
Speaking of bad money and subsidies, I mean, this is at the heart, right, of the Democrat ploy here to extend this government shutdown as long as possible as it relates to the Affordable Care Act. I mean, you know, when Obamacare was passed in 2008, we were told it was going to, you know, lower the cost of health care while raising the quality of care. And it seems as if the complete opposite has happened in the last, you know, 10, 12 years since that time. I mean, it's been a complete failure, frankly, in keeping health costs in check. And the truth of the matter is, all it did was shift the cost to the taxpayers. And this is why, you know, they have drawn this line in the sand, the Democrats have, through this shutdown, right, is that these credits, quote-unquote subsidies, are going to expire at the end of the year, something that's been passed over previous pieces of legislation under the Biden administration. Does create an interesting situation for the Republican Party, because they don't want to be the party moving into a midterm election responsible, right, for raising the premiums for health insurance for millions of people across the country.
Yeah, John, what's so sad about this is we don't really have a health care system in the United States. It's a health insurance system. The Affordable Care Act had nothing to do with care. It was mostly just about massive subsidies to the health insurers. And predictably, prices went up. They've gone up for absolutely everyone. There's actually a colleague of mine. He just moved to the United States. He got his visa legally, immigrated. He's in Nashville, Tennessee. And I helped him navigate choosing a health care plan. And basically, you have no choice but to go to the state exchange and look at whatever the deductible might be. It's just some of this stuff so astronomical, and it makes no sense. And realistically, if you're a young, healthy person or you're in your 30s or early 40s, most of the time it's not even worth it to get any of these health care plans. You just get an emergency plan, either get a direct primary care doctor or just pay cash whenever you need anything. A, you pay lower rates for almost anything, whether it be medicine or going to the doctor. And B, you're not having to fork over, you know, sometimes $15,000, $2,000, $3,000 a month for health insurance. And unfortunately, the problem with healthcare in D.C. is that it's just a subsidy machine. And they built up these subsidies during COVID that would help perhaps supplement some of the plans and make it a bit cheaper for people in the short term. But then the health insurers just suck that up. It's a cost of doing business, and it means that everybody's prices go up. So it's very unfortunate. It's not a thing that we want, but this is the problem. When you have your government much too involved in your health care and in your health insurance markets, you're going to get less of it, and it's going to be a lot more expensive. So what's needed is actually a lot more competition. You know, let's have some out-of-state providers come here to South Carolina and do that, provide better service and cost, and use some health alternatives like those DPCs I mentioned, or there's plenty of great new health plans out there that aren't your traditional health care company, and I think we need that.
I mean, when the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, was passed, the premium increase from 2013 to 2014 was 47%. That was the original effect. The increase from 2014 to 2026 was $5,416. The taxpayer share of that was nearly $4,900. That's 91% essentially that the taxpayer is footing the bill for millions to have health care through these subsidies. As you said, all right, we're going to do this emergency legislation during COVID, but we all know that you know, government programs are really hard to get away from once you know, they are implemented. No one wants to be the bad guy, so to speak, and cut these sorts of things.
Exactly. If you know that the federal government is just going to be doling out money to all of the health insurers, then, you know, as always happens, the prices are going to go up. It's the same thing with every single technology that the government has tried to invest in. And the problem is not that, you know, healthcare is illegitimate or, you know, it's not something the government should do. That's an entirely different debate. It's just plain economics, in that you have a market that's supposed to be working, supposed to have prices, it's supposed to have signals to people who provide health services and people who buy them. And if you just subsidize everything, if you introduce all this extra money, you just get price inflation. It's why you have college tuition that's at record levels. It's why you have healthcare spending just across the entire economy, not looking at just Medicaid, Medicare, and the VA, but everything else is through the roof. And again, this is very unfortunate because options do exist. People are able to opt out of this if they get their emergency care and they use a direct primary care doctor, if they're using health sharing services that are very popular in different parts of the country. You can kind of opt out of this because right now the way that it's going with the government plans, they're just not very affordable. I understand they had very good intentions with Obamacare, but it has made things more expensive. And we haven't really had a good debate on it. It's probably not a good time to do that during the shutdown, but I do predict that throughout the fall we'll have a lot more of this stuff going on.
So essentially what I gathered here, you know, everything the government touches, as you related just to us, relayed to us, from energy to healthcare, everywhere in between, the quality goes down and the costs go up.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely a thing. But, you know, there's a lot of regulations that you have to look at, too, a lot of rules. I mean, you have certificate of need laws that are in place throughout most of the states that allow hospitals to veto any other hospital in their district or in their county from being built. You have a lot of regulations about who can own hospitals. Doctors cannot own hospitals in the United States. People who have medical knowledge are not able to own them. So of course they're going to be scooped up by hedge funds, by VCs, by, you know, large corporations, because you're not going to have the ability for people with medical knowledge who might live in the area to actually put in a bid with a couple of doctors and own something. And there's a lot of these rules and red tape that that do make healthcare more expensive on its own. Unfortunately, too many of the reforms just look at insurance. But again, you should not get health insurance for absolutely everything you do. We do not have health insurance to change your tires or to change your wipers on your car. It's only for those catastrophic car accidents. And we should really rethink how we do it and do it more for those catastrophic events in our lives, too.
Hey, great insight, as always, from our friend Yael Osowski with the Consumer Choice Center at consumerchoicecenter.org. Always enjoy these conversations. Every time you speak to us, you know, we learn something new, and we appreciate your time, my friend. We'll catch you up again here in a couple weeks.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Joe, and thank you, DJ Slide.
All right, 822. Okay, yes, that's the party godfather, okay, DJ Slide on the ones and twos. The Hot Talk hotline and funk line, of course, is 839-9950 if you'd like to be a part of the show.